Blog Talk Radio.
It's 3 p.m., and I have a question for you. Do you know where your politicians are? Everything is political in your life, from the moment you're born to the moment you die. And when a politician tells you that's not true, look in your pocket. You'll find their hand in it. Everything is political. So we will be talking to those politicians that are working for you and talking about those politicians that are working against you. Just because they're a Democrat or just because they are a Republican and you voted that way your entire life, well, just maybe you were wrong, because everybody is not what they seem to be. However, there are a few out there that are working for your benefits, and we're going to bring them to you. We're going to let you hear them speak. We're going to let you ask them questions. We're also going to be discussing the education system, the military, science, sports, music, the movies. Ah, yes, healthcare. Do you have it? Do you need it? Is your 26-year-old still on the family's health care plan? Or as the Progressive Party says, Obamacare. We will bring you what you need to know, because this is the last word in everything. From the cities, the counties, the state, the nation, the entire world. So sit down, get a pencil, paper, and take a graduate education experience, and we will make sure that you have the last word. My name is Michael Lawson. Good afternoon. I'm trying to hook up my mic here. I don't know what happened here. No, that didn't work. Oh, there it is.
This is Michael Cohen, and you're listening to the Mea Culpa Podcast.
As I've been saying for several months now, it is better late than never.
Kristen Sinema, the unpredictable senator from Arizona and the last remaining holdout stopping the progress of the landmark Inflation Reduction Act of 2022, can once again hold her head high and retake her seat amongst her fellow Democrats. Because late Thursday, she announced her support of the bill, but not without compromises. Democratic leaders agreed to drop a $14 billion tax increase on some wealthy hedge fund managers and private equity executives that she had opposed for reasons known only to herself.
She is in a hugely powerful position. Yet the one thing she's asking for while she is in the catbird seat is to leave the carried interest loophole alone. Can you help us understand how that would serve anyone in the state of Arizona, a complete hookup for private equity titans? Who in Arizona would care about that?
She also asked that changes be made to the structure of the 15% tax on corporations that's included in the bill, and a little cash money to help Arizona deal with their current drought crisis and extreme fire conditions.
But the truth is that I've always fought for Arizona, and I have been proud to serve our state in elected office.
Sinema has made Joe Manchin look almost reasonable, but I'm not going to kick the gift horse in the mouth. Democrats are now one step closer to enacting a package that includes hundreds of billions of dollars for climate and energy programs, on top of a proposal to reduce the price of prescription drugs and extend expanded health insurance coverage, according to the New York Times. And it's expected to lower the deficit by $300 billion in the process. I mean, it's fucking brilliant.
You guys are on fire.
And ice and fire. And let us savor the shock and awe of Chuck Schumer's quiet but deadly deal-making that took Republicans completely by surprise. And despite the fact that in lockstep with Mitch McConnell, every single Republican will vote against the bill, the measure has the unanimous support of Democrats. Translation? This bill is walking the razor's edge in a 50-50 Senate. But we have the votes, and we're moving forward.
In the affirmative, and the bill, as amended, is passed. Everybody, after 24 hours or so of work on this bill, Vice President Harris there being the tie-breaking vote on the Senate floor today, it seems as if we have confirmation from the Vice President herself the Inflation Reduction Act has in fact passed today.
In a week that just keeps getting better for the president, the U.S. just added 528,000 jobs in July, making up for all the job loss due to COVID and then some. But the good news here is that it appears less and less likely we are headed for a recession. All eyes are on the Fed now to see if, when and how much they will raise interest rates. But with salaries up and gas prices down, corporations may take a hit, but it'll give Republicans less to bitch about during the midterms.
What a week of contrast. As President Biden was racking up win after win, Republicans were pushing abortion bans, Social Security cuts, election denial, and watching their midterm prospects begin to fade.
And while we're at it, let's just do a quick recap of Biden's week. The president had COVID for a second time, but somehow still managed a drone strike that took out Al-Qaeda's top boss and, remarkably, no one else. He signed a second executive order to protect doctors and safeguard what's left of abortion rights. He signed two major bills, the Honoring Our Pact Act that helps veterans affected by toxic burn pits, and the CHIPS bill that will boost the production of semiconductors and keep the United States competitive with China. The Inflation Reduction Act is about to pass also, so hey, let's go Joe! Or let's go Dark Brandon, as the clever kids on the interweb have started to call him.
Dark Brandon, rise up.
For all those of you who voted for President Trump, there's no way out.
Dark Brandon is essentially a series of memes that transforms Biden from the creaky, besieged, chronically ineffective Delawarean to a mastermind of the dark arts. Dark Brandon can't be stopped, reads one meme of Biden with glowing yellow eyes, like a Dragon Ball Z villain. There's another where he's got on his classic aviators, paired with a 5 o'clock shadow that simply reads, "It's over, Jack." Or my favorite one, "Actions speak louder than golf." So for all you fucking MAGA asshats who spent the last few years screaming, "Let's go, Brandon," in a thinly veiled way of saying fuck you to the old man, I say, let's go, Dark Brandon. Take back your power and keep kicking ass. It's nice to have a little good news to share after a few bleak months. Alex Jones has been completely exposed.
Mr. Jones, did you know that 12 days ago, your attorneys messed up and sent me an entire digital copy of your entire cell phone with every text message you've sent?
Oh, shit. Oh, they got your whole phone.
And when informed, did not take any steps to identify it as privileged or protect it in any way. And that is how I know you lied to me.
Bitch is over.
See, I told you the truth. This is your Perry Mason moment.
Perry Mason? Nah, dog, this is more like Matlock, because you're about to get Matlocked up.
And as of Friday, he now must pay $45 million on top of the $4.1 million to a Sandy Hook family he tortured with his lies. But his phone records, a treasure trove of diabolical coup, plotting, and child porn, have been subpoenaed by the Department of Justice and the January 6th committee. The records contain 3 years of communications between himself, the Oath Keepers, Roger fucking Stone, Rudy Caluti Giuliani, Trump, and the whole fucking freak show. The irony of the InfoWars guy having all of this info, texts, emails, and financials turned over to his enemies and by his own dipshit lawyers is proof certain that karma is the fucking bitch.
Serious crap. I'm sick of being social engineered. It's not funny.
And there may finally be some justice for Breonna Taylor. After her own state punted on the case, Merrick Garland and the DOJ have picked it up and are running with it. Long overdue, but it's happening. I may have to rethink my position on Garland. He's slow, but deliberate. Now let's hope he convicts those cops and gives her family some peace. Because there's no pain like living with injustice. Trust me, it's something I know all too well.
I have news.
And what sort of news do you have?
Not bad news, is it?
No, I can't take bad news.
The day started out so good.
The World Health Organization has declared monkeypox a global emergency.
So, former news anchor, notoriously combative when you ask her why she believes the election was stolen, because of course there's no proof of that. But listen, she got the endorsement of Mr. Trump. It was kind of tight, but she won.
Carrie Lake officially won her primary in Arizona. But Carrie, what about the stealing you detected? Since her big win, it suddenly no longer matters. I mean, of course, go figure.
Choco Taco. This is the thing. This is the thing we need to just be real about with the Choco Taco, all right? Klondike, they lied to us, man. They lied. That was an election. We had an election. We voted with our wallets. And we voted the Choco Taco out of the freezer. And now Klondike is trying to change the results of the election. And I will not stand for that. You cannot change the results of an election.
workers are being taunted, trolled, doxxed, and otherwise victimized by the MAGA anti-voting establishment, hell-bent on destroying our democracy, one poll worker at a time. And Christopher Wray admitted that he and the FBI did not follow up on the 4,500 tips that they got regarding Brett Kavanaugh's inappropriate sexual behavior over the years. Pro tip, if 4,500 people come forward to say there's something wrong with a guy, then there's no denying that it's true. As they say, 1,000 Frenchmen can't be wrong. Kavanaugh better watch his back. That's all I gotta say.
Furious. You know what would make us all feel better? A ladies' brunch. These bitches are down for it.
And while Donald Trump is still walking around a free man, basketball great Brittany Griner has been sentenced to 9 years in a penal colony in Russia. I mean, fucking, for God's sakes, guys, 9 years for a vape cartridge no bigger than a cigarette butt. But for all we know, was planted on her. She's high profile and Russia is using her as a gambling chip. We pray for her quick release and that the WNBA addresses the pay inquiry that forces these elite athletes to play elsewhere or accept scraps.
Tonight, members of the Connecticut Sun join our colleagues on the Phoenix Mercury at half court for 42 seconds, Brittany Griner's jersey number, to recognize the gravity of the moment and collectively send her strength. We're inspired every day by BG's strength, and we are steadfastly committed to keeping her top of mind publicly until she's safely back on American soil.
Brittany Griner is not the first victim of this sort of shakedown in Russia. In June of this year, American Mark Fogel, a teacher at the Anglo-American School in Moscow, was convicted of the exact same crime, a vape cartridge with trace amounts of THC. I mean, that's prescribed to him by a doctor. But Fogel got 14 years. The State Department is now engaged in serious negotiations for their release. And also, former U.S. Marine Paul Whelan, who in 2020 was sentenced to 16 years for allegedly spying. I mean, seriously, let's all just say the same together. Godspeed. And last but not least, I want to give a shout-out to Liz Cheney. Her interview Thursday on CNN was really something.
We're here in Wyoming where you are facing a really tough primary, in no small part because of the role that you've taken on in the January 6th hearings. Do you expect to lose on August 16th?
No, I don't expect to lose. I'm working hard to earn every single vote. And ultimately, I believe that the people of Wyoming, you know, fundamentally understand how important fidelity to the Constitution is, understand how important it is that, you know, we fight for those fundamental principles on which everything else is based.
I may not agree with any of her conservative politics, and she's old school that way, but she doesn't truck with any of the MAGA crap. She has taken a stand and done what few members in her party have done, put country over party, truth over power, and apparently she's still the apple of her father's eye.
Lynn and I are so proud of Liz for standing up for the truth, doing what's right, honoring her oath to the Constitution, when so many in our party are too scared to do so. Liz is fearless. She never backs down from a fight. There is nothing more important she will ever do than lead the effort to make sure Donald Trump is never again near the Oval Office.
And whether or not she wins her primary a few weeks from now, we have not heard the last from Liz Cheney, and you could fucking bet on that.
Reality that we face today as Republicans, as we think about the choice in front of us, we have to choose, because Republicans cannot both be loyal to Donald Trump and loyal to the Constitution.
Oh, really? Like, who gave you the, you know, the authority to say that? Like, 74 million Americans voted for Trump, and none of them count?
Now, you know, I've said this before, but I don't know. You need to be said time and time again. 74 million people. I don't believe it. I believe that a lot of those states rigged those votes. He would be the only one to do that. You got to look at it. The person that yells the loudest about something is the person that did that wrong. He's been yelling about, oh, the satellites did this, and there was aliens from outer space with space lasers. They changed the votes. Bullshit. This man, I don't believe he got 74 million votes. I don't believe it. And what we need to do is get one of his states, and go and look at the votes. Check the votes that his people were supposed to vote for. Because I don't believe he had 74 million votes. I don't believe it. Now, that was sort of a catch-up because we've been the next last 2 weeks of things that I hadn't been able to talk about. But we didn't even get into the fun start. Broke into his house. He said they broke into my house and broke into my vault. Oh, so you're saying that when the FBI with a legal warrant come to your house and you're not there, just got some Secret Service, I guess, there's a couple of them there, and who else is there? They're not allowed to be there because you're not there? The DOJ is not supposed to be following your orders. When they have an order to arrest you or to go get something for your house, they don't need your permission. You see what happened to your good friend, got the black hat. Anyway, when they knocked on his door, because they knew he was in there, they didn't have to bust in. You ever see the TV show, which I love, FBI? What are they going to look for you? They're breaking in the door. There's no, can we come in, please? No. But they didn't do that with him. If he was anybody else, if he was a black man, might have been like a Brianna that was shot in the bed 7 times. They didn't knock on her door. They said they did bullshit. They didn't knock on her door. And then when he knocked on the door, they burst in and came in firing. So, you know, there's a lot of things that are completely stupid here, and that any of this MAGA crowd that watches it on TV, and Ari Melville gets into this later. We're going to play a piece where Ari said, it's all right for them to do it to usins. That means black or brown people other than white people. You can break in our doors. You can stop us on the street, strip search us, take it. We got a warrant. But if they go to your house, they ain't supposed to do that. Matter of fact, they shouldn't even be at your house. This is what they're saying. Why are they at his house? He ain't the president no more. So you mean why are they at his house? Are we supposed to treat him different than you treat somebody else? Even if he was president, there are certain things that we can do, but being arrested is not one of them. Especially when a judge signed an order. Federal judge signed a warrant. He is not the president of the United States. And people, just remember that. He's not the president of the United States. No matter what you think about him losing, he's not now the president of the United States. Yes, it has never been done before where we've gone into another ex-president's house, but we never had a crook like this before. There was plenty of crooks, I'm sure there were, but not like this, who boldly says, yeah, I'm a crook, so what? What are you going to do about it? Well, nobody's ever done anything about these other crooks before. But Merrick Garland wasn't the DOJ chief then either. Let's hear what if I can find this. This is what... Where is that? Oh, this is what the raid on Mar-a-Lago. This is something. Listen to this.
Michael Cohen, and you're listening to the Mea Culpa Podcast.
We are joined now by Michael Cohen. He is the host of the Mea Culpa Podcast. He's a principal with Crisis X, and he has walked us through so many of these issues here. Welcome back.
Good to see you, Ari.
You hear that type of criticism. That was about a search on you. Now the search has hit home in a big way for Donald Trump. What is he doing here? Did he misplay this? And what would be in his face?
Well, he definitively misplayed it. It's definitely karma boomerang. He didn't believe anything that he was saying about me. It wasn't about me. It's always about him. And that's what he now has to contend with. So it's funny that you asked me about what was in the safe. Today, I probably received about 24+ phone calls from journalists asking, what do you think was in the safe? And I think everybody should sort of stop and let's just allow the process to go forward. Pass the popcorn, kids, because this movie is just starting to get good. All anyone can talk about is the FBI finally arriving at Mar-a-Lardo's doorstep. It was inevitable, but they didn't really raid the place. They carefully combed through looking for classified documents that Trump had refused to hand over. They had previously collected 15 boxes of documents he was not authorized to take. Then they came for the rest. Or so the story goes, but they didn't toss his place. They didn't drag him out half naked in the middle of the night. No, they came, they took 12 more boxes of evidence, and they left. Yeah. So they broke into his safe. They still didn't make any sort of scene, but Trump sure did. Of course he fucking made a scene. Has there ever been a bigger fundraising opportunity than falsely claiming that after constant harassment, your political opponents have used the FBI to raid your beautiful home? No, never. It's a fucking cash cow, and Trump is going to ride it all the way to the bank.
To me, it's very personally known. It says, Lawrence, the radical left is corrupt. This is your chance to stand with President Trump. Please rush in a donation immediately to publicly stand with President Trump against this never-ending witch hunt.
Plus, Trump has his civil war to foment. Perfect opportunity to get the violent insurrectionist wing of MAGA locked, loaded, and ready to go. And last week, Fox News didn't want anything to do with Trump, but now their fake news machine is working overtime, churning out gems like this.
This is an abomination.
This is Gestapo crap.
It's probably the worst day in the history of the FBI.
This is a wake-up call for those in Congress to be able to use the tools at their disposal to defund the FBI, dismantle the FBI into 1,000 bits.
Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene simply tweeting, defund the FBI.
If this is what they're able to do to the former president of the United States, think about what they could do to you, to anybody in America.
The real target of this investigation isn't Trump. The real target of this investigation is you.
Do we have a dual justice system in America? Is there equal justice under the law?
I am deathly afraid for Donald Trump. I would not put assassination behind these people.
We're entering a Venezuelan, Zimbabwean, East German-style banana republic in which the law doesn't matter.
Okay, this is some third world bullshit right here. Let me say it again, third world bullshit.
But just as sure as the sun rises, Trump has already started to spin a yarn claiming that the FBI, while all alone in Mar-a-Lago, planted evidence that they will somehow use against him. Check out this Trump Truth Social post that's trying to be a tweet.
Donald Trump writing on Truth Social today, quote, everyone was asked to leave the premises. They wanted to be left alone without any witnesses to see what they were doing, taking, or hopefully not, planting.
Quite honestly, I'm concerned that they may have planted something. You know, at this point, who knows?
We know they doctor evidence. We know they plant evidence.
Do I know that the boxes of material they took from Mar-a-Lago, that they won't put things in those boxes to entrap him? How do we know?
His lawyers said they brought in backpacks. What was in those backpacks? Did they bring those in to fill them up, or did they have something in there?
So let's face it. They must have found something Donald didn't want them to find. Otherwise, he'd tell us what they've taken. The law requires the FBI to give Trump an inventory on what they found. If he wants to claim the search was a witch hunt and that he's innocent of hiding government property in his house, which isn't really his house, it's a fucking country club, he should just release the search inventory. Simple, right?
I am still all hot and bothered about that FBI raid at Mar-a-Lago. Turns out my kink is consequences.
Ironically, after years of Trump and his acolytes screaming, lock her up, about Hillary Clinton's mishandling of White House classified information, in 2018, he stiffened the penalty for removal or retention of classified documents from 1 year to 5 years and turned it into a felony offense. But even Donald Trump's own rules don't apply to, yes, Donald Trump.
So there are five people taking the Fifth Amendment. Like you see on the mob, right? You see the mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment?
I don't know. You tell us, you guilty bitch.
I once asked if you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth? Now I know the answer to that question, Trump said in a statement after declining to answer a single question and taking nothing but the Fifth for 6 hours during his testimony Wednesday in a New York civil investigation against his business by the Attorney General. I know, so many Trump investigations and lawsuits in so little time.
And honestly, you know, I'm amazed that Trump has time for all of this crime. Like at any moment, Trump's got a crime that he's covering up, he's got a crime that he's doing now, he's got a crime that he's plotting for the future. He's like the Steve Harvey, but of crimes, you know?
But this particular case brought by the New York Attorney General, Tish James, is a lawsuit against the Trump Organization for alleged tax evasion and making false statements. James already has her case. She's just trying to connect the players to the game, so to speak. James detailed evidence claiming that the Trump Organization used fraudulent or misleading asset valuations to obtain loans or other economic benefits. You fucking bet they did, and Trump knew all about it. Nothing goes on in Trump land without Trump's knowledge, and I know this firsthand. Nothing.
Early this morning on Truth Social, former President Trump called James racist and said her investigation continues the greatest witch hunt in U.S. history.
But Trump didn't talk for several reasons. First, he's busy pretending that this case in New York against his business is somehow related to the raid on Mar-a-Lago. It isn't. Number two, Trump hates Tish James, but doesn't want to tangle with her in some sort of war of words that might corner him into admitting anything. And third, Manhattan District Attorney Alvin Bragg may have put his case on ice, but if Trump says something that either contradicts earlier statements or can be used as evidence against him, Bragg might just get off his ass and grow a pair, which is what it would take for Bragg to reopen his case. Mark Pomerantz, who quit the district attorney's office when Bragg dropped the case, has this to say about it. I think it was a case that should have been brought. I believe that Donald Trump, in fact, was guilty and that there was sufficient evidence as a matter of law to have sustained a guilty verdict if we went forward.
They slandered him. They belittled him. You know, they went after him. They went after all of us. There's no family in American history that has taken more arrows in the back than the Trump family.
Eric Trump took the Fifth over 500 times when he was questioned by Tish James earlier this year. And Trump said it himself, and I'm going to quote it. You see, the mob takes the Fifth. If you're innocent, why are you taking the Fifth Amendment? Just a reminder, Hillary testified for over 11 hours and never broke a sweat. And, more importantly, never took the Fifth.
For 40 years, everyone running for president has released their tax returns. You can go and see nearly, I think, 39, 40 years of our tax returns, but everyone has done it. We know the IRS has made clear there is no prohibition on releasing it when you're under audit. So you've got to ask yourself, why won't he release his tax returns?
Quick thing about Donald's disappearing taxes. Tuesday, a federal appeals court upheld the ruling of a lower court that the IRS can finally release his tax returns to the House Ways and Means Committee. His lawyers, of course, will appeal, but then again, drip, drip, drip goes this case. And also on Tuesday, the MAGA warlord who wants to be governor of Pennsylvania, Doug Mastriano, met virtually with the January 6th committee and left without answering a single question. The whole interview didn't last 15 minutes before he threw a tantrum and quit. Mike Pompeo did a little better. Zoe Lofgren, a member of the committee, gave few details about Pompeo's testimony, but did tell CNN's Wolf Blitzer that he came in willingly and he did answer questions for quite some time.
Aaron, we were told this morning that Pompeo was expected to meet with the committee today virtually, so there's not a room he's going to be walking in and out of that we can track. And, of course, the committee is characteristically tight-lipped about what exactly they want from Pompeo, but we know that they are interested in discussions that were reported to have happened between cabinet secretaries after January 6th regarding invoking the 25th Amendment to declare then-President Trump unfit for office and essentially remove him. And Pompeo was, of course, one of the most prominent cabinet secretaries as the Secretary of State at the time and also a firm Trump ally. He is someone that they want to learn more from.
Strange twist, Pompeo was also a target of the Iranians who plotted to kill former Trump security advisor John Bolton. Wednesday, the DOJ brought charges against Iran's Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps for allegedly trying to orchestrate the assassination of John Bolton and Mike Pompeo for $1 million, likely in retaliation for the January 2020 U.S. airstrike that killed Qasem Soleimani, commander of the Islamic Revolutionary Guard Corps, while Pompeo was Secretary of State. So guys, watch out. Scott Perry was on vacation with the family when the FBI stepped by and took his phone because of his connection to the January 6th insurrection. Too bad Donald didn't float him that pardon he requested, and an Atlanta judge ordered Rudy fucking Colluti Giuliani to testify in person before a special grand jury investigating Trump's attempts to overthrow the election results in Georgia. He claimed his doctor wouldn't let him fly, which was utter fucking bullshit, because the judge offered that he could take the train or maybe even the bus.
Things like that create this atrophy in the foundation of America will destroy America. It's like Lincoln said, we're not going to be destroyed from foreign forces coming on in. It's going to be from within if we allow things that are so anti-constitutional to be able to usurp, for instance, the balance of power.
And here's an update. John Stewart showed up for the president's signing of the PACT Act that he fought so vigilantly for. The president made sure to acknowledge Stewart's good work, saying the bill wouldn't be before him if it wasn't for everything he'd done. All this has led some pundits to suggest Stewart run for office since it appears he can actually get shit done in Washington. Maybe, but I think all the politics would kill him.
Well, that's right. I think the politics would kill him, too. I mean, you know, we got these people around the country. And all they say is, all they're talking about is, it's against the law. We need to get rid of the FBI. What? Weren't they the same people that wanted to lock up all the African Americans and others, not just African Americans, but other people who are saying that we need to defund the police? We need to treat the police different. Now we're going to get rid of the FBI. You gotta remember, these are the same toadies that went in a group and fought the police at the Capitol. Well, there's more of us, we can take them. With more of us, we can take them. But you know, their scared asses wouldn't be out there if they're by themselves. Hell no. They had to go out as a group because they're punks. All these people who are voting, talking all this bull about Trump are punks. They can't handle it by themselves. They talk behind somebody else.
Now, as soon as you get them in court, what's the thing they say? He made me do it. He made me do it. You know, it reminds me of the kids in school. When the kid comes home and the mother or the father's got him, he says, no. He's talking about an older brother. He made me do it. Your brother made you do it. Yeah. Well, that's what these people are saying. Trump made me do it. Trump, you know, also there's used to be a TV show on which I just loved called the Lucifer. Great show. And they asked him, well, you're a damn devil. Why did you let these people do the damn things they do? He said, my job was not to stop people doing what they're doing. They do what they want to do. I'm just here and punish them after they do it. When they come down to see me, I don't prevent them and tell them to do this when they're up on earth. They want to do it. All these people that wanted to do that at the Capitol, they wanted to do that. Nobody, I don't care if it was Trump, I don't care if it was their mother. It wasn't the devil. It wasn't Cyclops. It wasn't anybody else. They wanted to do it. They wanted to do it. And to blame anybody else, oh, I heard on TV, and Tucker Carlson said that, forget that. Did you want to do it? Yes, that's why you did it. Just like Elizabeth said in the TV show, hey, I'm not here to make people do anything they don't want to do. I'm not here to force people to do anything. All I'm here is just to be patient and wait for them to go to hell where I can punish them. That's my joy, punishing them, not making them do it. So we got to remember, all these people are doing all this talking, all this nonsense. Oh, yes, well, he did that, and the Democrats are stealing this. And, well, they haven't said anything about that. All they're saying now is that they can't do that to the president. But they are not saying why. They're not even saying, well, first of all, why did he take top secret information home to his country club? Unsecured country club. Why did he take that information home? I mean, that's all. That's all we're asking. He has not answered it yet. He didn't have the right to do it because that is not his information. He's only in charge of it when he's inside the White House. You don't take information home. You see what happens when you take information, you take it from different places. They put your handcuffs or shackle it to a suitcase and you take it home. You don't carry it home in a daggone cardboard box and put it in your basement. What the purpose is that? The daggone country needs to know about it, not you. And one other thing, you haven't noticed that he hasn't said anything about this raid on Mar-a-Lago about the information. He hasn't mentioned anything about the information. He hasn't mentioned anything about the information that the FBI and DOJ is looking at, because he don't want us to know. No, I know. He doesn't want those people, his so-called people who are giving him money, who he's grifting off of and continuously grifts off, because these people are completely stupid. Hey. Stupid is and stupid does. Now, we also got the boy Weisselberg. You know, Trump is in so many freaking different situations. He's got the Attorney General of New York State. He's got the Manhattan DA. He's got SDNY in New York City. He's got the Georgia prosecutor. He has another case in Washington that hasn't even come up yet. He has Mar-a-Lago. He's got six different places that, as far as we know, are unrelated, that he needs lawyers for. One lawyer can't handle all that. And he just got a lawyer, according to Ari, a couple of days ago. This guy is a rap lawyer. Yeah, he's working on a couple of cases on the federal side, but he's a rap lawyer. He's working with rap cases. With rappers? Yes. I don't know his name offhand, but I might have it here somewhere in what we'll talk about this afternoon. But anyway, that's what his story is. So he can't get any good lawyers. The case going around is that he never paid them. He never pays them. But he always manages to come out on top. You know why? He don't come out on top. He pays off in the end. But you can't pay off a crime, a federal crime, that's a crime like what he has done in Mar-a-Lago with top secret information. It's a criminal offense now. Civil offenses you can pay off. You can finally pay up. You want a couple million dollars? Yeah. $150 million? Okay, I'll give it back to you. You had to pay off to settle his private equity firm. Yes, pay off for that. He had to pay off for the school, university that he was scamming people off of. He's gonna have to pay off on the judgment that's gonna be coming up very shortly on the golf courses. So this is why he needs this money, because after Trish James, the Attorney General of New York City, takes the money and folds up his tent in the DOJ organization in New York City, like she did with his three other institutions that he ran, when she folds up his main institution, the Trump Organization, he'll have no other income. And that means his kids won't have any other income because they all work there. Ivanka has got some income. She's still got her I think she still has some corporate entities in China. I'm not sure. So it's becoming very, very apparent that it's starting to close in on him, and this has never happened to him before. Now, Weisselberg, who's the CEO of the Trump Organization, it just admitted that, yeah, I'm guilty. And he'll be sentenced to 5 years. 5 months, I'm sorry. Sentenced to 5 months. That's only on condition that he doesn't lie to the judge. If they find out anything that he's been lying about, it could be 5 to 15 years. So let's just see if this 5 months holds. And here what Ari said about it. A couple of days ago here.
Is Donald Trump, who has more to fear and more to lose in any forum that is focused on facts and evidence. Now, to our special guest, my one-on-one interview with the former general counsel of the FBI and a former senior member of the Mueller probe, Andrew Weissman. With this kind of stuff going on and new rulings, you're exactly who we want to hear from. Thanks for being on the beat tonight.
Nice to be here.
I just walked through some of that, both legal and out-of-court analysis. Your thoughts?
So I couldn't agree with you more. Big picture, Donald Trump has learned that the courts are not his friends because they deal in a world where facts and law matter. And he learned certainly from challenging the election results that he lost in front of so-called Trump judges and Obama judges. It didn't matter who appointed them. Everyone lost. Everyone ruled against him, and he lost. Mm-hmm. So, that's why today he said out of court what he wanted, but he made no motion at all, as you said, to intervene and state his position. The one thing I would slightly push back on is the idea that DOJ completely lost or the news organizations completely won. Mm-hmm. If you think of it in terms of the full affidavit. There's no question that DOJ won in the sense that the full affidavit is not going to get released, and the news organizations won in the sense that it's not the case that nothing is getting released. And you know, this is something I...
Could I push back on your pushback?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are there two lawyers in this segment? Would you say that? Would you say that based on what we know, the bulk of the affidavit will come out?
No, I don't think so.
What would you say? What portion do you expect for people to understand? Because we've heard a lot of legal terms and redactions. I'm trying to make sure people say there is more information coming. How much it is and how much of that is a win or a loss is to be explained. That's why you're here. But more is coming. Explain to us how much more, and then of course complete your point.
So remember that the district court, I mean, so the magistrate judge has seen the entire affidavit. So when the government was saying it's all something that's sensitive to a criminal investigation, or it's all something sensitive from a national security perspective or witnesses, he has in front of him the affidavit, so he can sort of see, are there portions that don't implicate those concerns. So the things that I think we will still not see is anything that could reveal the identity of witnesses. I don't think we're going to learn anything about the substance of classified information, those kinds of documents. So if we're concerned, for instance, was there nuclear information, I don't know that we're going to see that. And I think leads, things about various things that the department might still be doing. So things that they saw in the surveillance tapes, for instance, if that's in the affidavit, I think all of that could be fairly redacted. Having said that, an area where I do think we could see something that would be very useful is the whole back and forth between the department and Donald Trump and his people. That's something that Donald Trump knows. Those people can clearly put it out there. And I could see the judge saying, you know what, I don't really see how that implicates so much the concerns here from a national security perspective.
Right.
Maybe some of the substance would be redacted, but you know, that seems like it would give us a fair amount of detail, at least on something, and more than we know now.
And on a smaller point, Andrew, we're going to keep the banner we have up right here. The way these interviews work, I don't know if you can see our banner right now.
I can't.
Well, it says judge pushes back, which I guess ended up being the legal theme of the moment. So shout out to everyone.
I agree with that. Yeah, I agree with that.
I
think we can all agree.
Let me get you on another case that overlaps to something you know a lot about, and that there's been wide debate over, is it enough, is it something? But I got to tell you, I think you would agree, I think almost anyone would agree, if Barack Obama had a company and the whole company was indicted and was going on trial and a top executive of that company pled guilty to multiple crimes, that's a big deal. Apart and separate from whether there is a view about what Donald Trump's individual liability is, which of course is a story in more than one jurisdiction. So stay with me. Let me update everyone. Alan Weisselberg, we've heard all about today. It finally happened. He pled guilty on these tax fraud charges, and he is slated to serve up to 5 months in Rikers. That is the infamous prison in New York. Now, Rikers is not a very easy place to be. Indeed, we've covered it as a place that has notorious conditions, overcrowding, basic necessities, human rights violations have been an issue. And we've covered that no matter who ends up there, because people in prison are still people. So it's going to be potentially a whole different experience for him. The Trump executive also is slated to cooperate in the corporate part of this. The trial of the Trump organization, the leadership of that company includes Donald Trump Jr., Ivanka Trump, and Eric Trump, Weisselberg. However, still got this plea, and he is convicted now. He is a felon. He is saying he did these things, but he is not willing to cooperate against Donald Trump himself. Trump insiders have long said Weisselberg knows it all.
I think that all roads lead to Alan Weisselberg. I mean, all fingers point to him.
The only few people that in the Trump organization that know anything about the taxes is Mr. Trump, who knows everything about everything, Alan Weisselberg, the chief financial officer.
Do you think he could be the ultimate tour guide into the Trump orbit?
Yes.
Always Alan Weisselberg on the check. Mr. Weisselberg, for sure.
Andrew, is it a big deal that the Trump org itself is going on trial, and what does today mean?
It is a big deal. I am somebody who, I think like a lot of people prior to today, had a lot of skepticism about the Manhattan DA's office and whether the investigation was really ongoing in a meaningful way. And I've changed my mind. I think this is a big deal. First, there's no question the defense got something out of this because they capped their exposure to 5 months if and only if he testifies truthfully. So he has to at least partially cooperate. So he has to take the stand on October 24th in the Trump Organization case, assuming that the organization doesn't plead out, and there's going to be a ton of pressure on them now, I think, to get a plea. But assuming he testifies, it's going to be really hard not to mention the T word in that trial. I mean, we're talking about a very small company. And in order for Weisselberg to get his 5-month deal, the judge today made it absolutely clear it is only if he testifies truthfully. If he breaches that and the judge finds that he did not testify truthfully, then the book gets thrown at him. He can face the 5 to 15 years of the maximum charge. So that's a big deal. And the other thing that I found really interesting today is that Alan Weisselberg, in pleading guilty, admitted to something that the Manhattan DA's office charged, which was they charged that not only was this a state and city tax offense, but notably they said it was a federal offense,
right.
And he pleaded to that today.
Right, and as you remind folks, state and federal taxes have implications, and when people are defrauding the government, they're also defrauding their fellow citizens. These are very rich people, Mr. Weisselberg, Mr. Trump, by any measure, and they're out here nickel-diming up to high funds to evade taxes, which means somebody else has to pick up the bill. Andrew, on more than one topic, thank you, sir.
Thank you.
All right. So, they're nickel and diming because that's what they do. They're nickel and dime artists. They're grifters. They don't want to spend their own money because that means I have less money if I have to spend my own money. I got 5 cents in my pocket, but you got 10. Let's spend some of your money. But normally it isn't that way. Normally they got 10, you got 5, and they still want to spend some of your money but not their money. Well, this is where we're at right now. Hope I didn't lose anybody because my internet just went off. I don't understand why, but it did. So let's go back and see if it will come back up. Anyway, what happened is that this is what they say about Wasserberg. Wasserberg is definitely going to be screwed. Because he's going to have to, he said he wasn't going to testify against Trump. Joe says, all right, if you testify, everything you say is good for us, then it'll be good for you. And it'll be good for me, therefore 5 months will be good. Now, you know, if that was anybody else, they wouldn't be getting the 5 months. They'd be getting the minimum five years. But he get him 5 months. He owned, I don't know how much money he had, owned $200,000, $100 million in taxes. He's going to have to pay them. So that means he probably owed about $100 million. We'll see. But these guys, they all do it. Trump has been doing it forever. And you got to remember, Trump's father was one of the people in the original riot in New York City back in the early 1900s where the Ku Klux Klan marched in Sun City Hall, and they had the, very similar to that movie, again, my mind just gone. Anyway, it was an Academy Award movie. Some of New York, I can't think of the name of it. His father was one of the heads of the Ku Klux Klan. He was never named when he caught all these guys and rounded them all up. He was never named, so he made it off the scene. And then years later, he started saw his way in, building all these houses for these GIs coming back. And he got his hands on government loans. But he stayed right there in Brooklyn and Staten Island, never went into the big city. He said, because when you're in the big city, you got big people watching you. But Uncle Donald wanted to be better than his daddy. He wanted to be better than anybody. He says, I'm going to Manhattan. Father said, don't go there, son. You will get messed up. He said, I'm doing it. Did it anyway. Hey, his father's dead now. Mother's dead now. His aunt knows him. Mary Trump knows about it. And he has been grifting. He hasn't worked a day in his damn life. He's never done anything where it took nothing but a hustle. That's all he's done. He's hustled. He's the gift of gab, and he sell you the Brooklyn Bridge three times, and you want to go for a fourth time. But not in New York. We got aware of him. I met him one time when I was in New York, one time. He was at a fundraiser for Charlie Rangel. And just got a picture. Wonderful. Oh, God. Thomas, my senior producer. He is incredible. I'm telling you, he needs to come on here. All right. Anyway, so this is what he was doing. And he found out there was one way to get around this. And that was to scam everybody. Because people are dopes. People can be bought in a micro minute. Dumb people can be bought in a micro minute. Dumb people. But that's the way it is. And people who can be bought will always be bought because they have no ideas of their own. And they're always looking for someone to give them a leg up, show them how they can make some money for nothing without putting any sweat into it. So, you know, when people are looking to get and scam you and to get things right for themselves and to scam you out of something, these are the people that are going to scam you forever. These are the people that are going to scam you forever. We have Ari Melber did a, which we're going to play a little bit later. Ari Melber did a major, called The Rule of Law. Ari did a great, great, great report on it. And one of the things that he did was when the judge, he talked about the judge ordering the DOJ to justify how much of the search warrant can be revealed. Let me just play a little bit of this right here. Come on, Ari. Nope, get out of the way. Okay, I can't. Mine just got up a little bit. Can I go now? Get up. All right, maybe that's it right there.
More about that unprecedented search of Trump's home because a judge has ruled that parts
of the DOJ prosecutor's roadmap for that must now be unsealed and released soon. It's the affidavit that the Garland DOJ wanted to keep secret after releasing the search warrant itself. DOJ arguing the entire roadmap was too sensitive to be released, citing witness protection and the ongoing investigation. So here's the news. The DOJ lost that argument today, the judge finding that those prosecutors failed to meet the burden to prove the entire affidavit should remain sealed, ordering the Garland DOJ to now file their secret proposed redactions within a week. So that's a loss for them on process and a win for getting more information about this operation. As a general citizen, if you are interested in learning even more about what's going on there, well, that's a win. Most news outlets wanted the outcome. For that reason, some had filed in court for it. Trump also said he wanted that outcome. But that's been a shift for him. He went from hiding the original warrant, which he had the whole time, then saying he wanted it released, then the judge releasing some new materials as well today, like more of the warrant application, which cites the illegally possessed information, contraband, at Mar-a-Lago. Now, the entire intel probe here is still in early stages as they review the new evidence they got from searching Mar-a-Lago. So, bottom line, we are going to learn more about this operation, which means learning more about evidence that was at Trump's home that the government views as stolen and illegal. Then there is Donald Trump's effort to publicize and spin all of this out of court. You know, Trump often attacks reporters. I think everybody knows that. But he also likes a good scoop. It was Donald Trump who broke the news of that initial search in his angry statement. The DOJ, in fact, has emphasized that while it respected his confidentiality up and through that search, it was Donald Trump who made it a spectacle. Indeed, I was thinking about this today. After Trump had that brief foray into post-presidential blogging, when his post got virtually no audience and he shuttered that blog, and after he's been living this quieter life, if you will, kicked off of social media, he really did have the scoop of the year in publicizing his own search or raid. Breaking a story, even an incriminating one, can put you in the position to help shape it. Or at least that's the Trump playbook. Remember his longest-serving advisor, Roger Stone, seen here under that very dramatic arrest? Well, we have that video. It says Sinclair because it was leaked to them, but we have it because Roger Stone leaked his own arrest video. And it might seem odd showing your own arrest in a situation that otherwise would never have been seen by the public. And there he was being marched by those agents in his shirt. Or take Trump cooler, John Eastman, who recently shared a video of himself being lawfully searched during that, what you see there. This was shared with Fox News, but it was Eastman's video. Police made him put his hands on his head. They took his phone under that judge-approved warrant. Again, it might seem like something people would not want to share. There's no alleged misconduct or illegal search, let alone police brutality. There's just Eastman's criminal evidence himself. There he is with the warrant that's under law. And, well, ever the lawyer, I guess he decided to try to start telling them what he thought of the situation. That's the playbook, which gives context to news first reported on CNN and confirmed by NBC that Trump aides are now mulling release of their own surveillance video of the Mar-a-Lago search, which would be a similar playbook to try to grab some kind of attention around what is a lawful search that most people wouldn't want to publicize. Most people wouldn't say, oh, I've just been searched. Oh, this is stressful. Hey, honey, can you get the video from the home cam? Let's put it on the internet or the television. Let's show everyone people searching our home. What's more telling in all this is what Trump is not doing. They are not appealing the search in court, as far as we know. They're not demanding a hearing about trying to recover the evidence taken from Mar-a-Lago or suppress it in future court proceedings. If they did that, and here's why they're afraid of that, if they did that, the facts would be weighed, and a judge would then decide whether they win or lose. And the reason they're not doing it might actually be, fair point, some prudent lawyering. That Trump may be listening to some lawyer's advice, including his new Florida counsel, that they would almost certainly lose that appeal, which would draw more attention to how it was a lawful search because he had allegedly illegal material on site. So experts think Trump would lose that type of challenge for the same reason that Attorney General Garland's prosecutors lost a proceeding or part of this clash today. And I know this is going to sound old-fashioned, but let me tell it to you before we bring in a very big legal guest. These judges, they're not supposed to pick sides in advance. They oversee federal powers that are designed to check prosecutors and subjects alike. And the system does not always work perfectly, as we've reported right here. But I can tell you something. This system is based more on evidence than, say, the freewheeling lies you hear in campaigns or the deep state fan fiction that passes for analysis in many MAGA discussions about this lawful search. So today, that process had a dash of pushback for Garland's prosecutors. While I should tell you, long term, those same prosecutors and several legal experts say it is Donald Trump who has more to fear and more to lose in any forum that is focused on facts and evidence. Now, to our special guest, my one-on-one interview with the former general counsel of the FBI and a former senior member of the Mueller probe, Andrew Weissman. With this kind of stuff going on and new rulings, you're exactly who we want to hear from. Thanks for being on the beat tonight.
Nice to be here.
I just walked through some of that, both legal and out-of-court analysis. Your thoughts?
So I couldn't agree with you more. Big picture, Donald Trump has learned that the courts are not his friends because they deal in a world where facts and law matter. And he learned certainly from challenging the election results that he lost in front of so-called Trump judges and Obama judges. It didn't matter who appointed them. Everyone lost. Everyone ruled against him, and he lost.
Mm-hmm.
So that's why today he said out of court what he wanted, but he made no motion at all, as you said, to intervene and state his position. The one thing I would slightly push back on
sure.
is the idea that DOJ completely lost or the news organizations completely won.
Mm-hmm.
If you think of it in terms of the full affidavit, there's no question that DOJ won in the sense that the full affidavit is not going to get released, and the news organizations won in the sense that it's not the case that nothing is getting released.
Could I push back on your pushback?
Yeah, absolutely.
Are there two lawyers in this segment? Would you say that based on what we know, the bulk of the affidavit will come out?
No, I don't think so.
What would you say? What portion do you expect? For people to understand, because we've heard a lot of legal terms and redactions. I'm trying to make sure people say there is more information coming. How much it is and how much of that is a win or a loss is to be explained. That's why you're here. But more is coming. Explain to us how much more, and then, of course, complete your point.
So remember that the district court, the magistrate judge,
I don't know what happened here, but Trump needs a lawyer. We've been saying this. He has got. Here's a little bit what Ari said about that.
Now to our special report. A former president's struggle to get just about any criminal defense attorneys while he's facing basically the most escalating simultaneous criminal probes of his long, litigious life. The new headline this week is familiar. Everyone at law firms saying no to Trump's bids to get seasoned lawyers. It's familiar because you may recall it's a problem Trump also faced, and this was documented during the Mueller probe. Now, the reporting states the reasons stem from one, Trump is a person, and two, Trump is a deadbeat. His style and refusal to cooperate or take advice makes him nearly impossible to represent, say sources. One observer diplomatically noted it would be unclear if new lawyers would ever get paid. Yes, it would be unclear. Or there's a long line of litigation and complaints about him not paying bills. So Trump has been in similar spots before. And he has found lawyers, and he has evaded other cases. So let's be clear. You might hear this and say, okay, Ari, but we've heard about this before, and then he still got away. But I want to be clear with you, only following the facts as we can find them, Donald Trump is in a measurably worse and more desperate legal condition now. For example, before, he'd never been subject to a criminal search of his home. That's a first this month. He'd never pled the Fifth Amendment until last week. He had the federal criminal probe eyeing his failed coup, which is a set of government-related problems with people cooperating when he's out of government, so different than the Mueller probe. And then just today, as reported, the top finance officer of his company pleading guilty. The whole firm awaits that October trial. And one of Trump's recent lawyers, who's not available to represent him anymore, is because of his legal problems. Rudy Giuliani, busy with the criminal probe in Georgia, where he has been formally targeted for indictment, just testified 6 hours yesterday. And that's a trend with Trump's lawyers. They often find themselves in need of other lawyers. And that's the third reason that sometimes it can be hard for him to find lawyers, because the new lawyers look at this kind of case, understand not only could it be expensive when they don't get paid, but it could be disastrous if they lose their law license, like Roy Cohn, who was disbarred, or Michael Cohen, who was convicted, or the recently searched coup lawyer, John Eastman. Now, Trump's lawyer representing specifically the Florida matter, that search, is already linked to the elector fraud plot, which means she could have Giuliani-type problems, and she left television to work for Trump, but then likened the situation, well, back to the silver screen.
Why wouldn't you just release that yourselves?
Well, this is part of the discussion with the Department of Justice. Of course, we're trying to do everything in accordance with the law and the way that...
There's absolutely nothing preventing you guys from releasing it, though.
Other than decorum.
That's one relatively new lawyer in Florida where, as we reported, there are signs that the search was more about recovering evidence than preparing charges, meaning that is not Donald Trump's worst problem. Most people would be very concerned to have their home searched under a criminal warrant in any situation, but for him, Florida's lesser. So what's more? Well, as I'm telling you, it's a different story in Georgia where the DA has targeted over a dozen people for indictment for alleged crimes that were to benefit Trump, meaning not just random crimes or people he knows, but crimes for his political benefit, for his attempted coup. And it's linked to his own illicit demands, which were caught on tape.
So, look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have.
That is very bad. That is now criminal evidence. That is on tape. If you follow this stuff sometimes and you say, gosh, it seems like Trump did so much all over the place, especially around trying to overthrow the election, that's public evidence. That's something people can decide whether it disqualifies him for office or not in your own mind and vote. But our legal system, as I've told you, is much more precise. So if he does one thing over here in Wisconsin and another in Georgia, those are two different state probes dealing with state law. Georgia is the place that's the worst for Trump. Georgia is the place where you have that tape. Georgia is the place where you have others already marked for targeted indictment. Now, having said that, nobody can predict what DAs or grand juries will do. But the evidence matters, so you have more damning evidence in Georgia than any other state. So his problem is most acute there. And let me tell you something. Donald Trump seems to know that. Because while I just showed you the reporting about how he's juggling this search for lawyers in more than one case all over the country and in his home state of Florida and recruiting people off TV or off personal relationships, in Georgia it's a little different, which is our special report. New information, he has now turned to a seasoned criminal defense trial lawyer who has actually clashed with this same DA in Atlanta, who has won some uphill criminal cases, who is part of a small but experienced criminal defense firm. It's the Findling Law Firm in Georgia, and it's headed by the former president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. We're talking about real credentials here. The New York Times just broke the news that Trump got this legal breakthrough, and he's hired Drew Findling, sometimes called the billion-dollar lawyer, as his counsel in Georgia. Now, Mr. Findling also, according to the New York Times, is best known for representing rappers. And bottom line, Trump is facing a potential RICO charge here, which is a gangster problem. And now he tapped Gucci Mane's lawyer. It was Findling who got the very celebrated artist Gucci Mane off what could have been almost life and career-ending situations. He had 2013 charges that included allegedly threatening police, which has become quite popular among MAGA supporters lately. And Findling was able to bring that down from a possible 20 years in prison to 3. And I'll tell you, in that situation, it was considered a legal success, although it is 3 more years in prison than his new client would be hoping to serve.
Yeah. Now, I got to get to Ari's the rule of law. So, but there's a second part to this this lawyer thing, and this Finley. Now, I may be good, but as far as I can say, he's still a rap lawyer. So let's just see.
Now to our special report. A former president's struggle to get just about any criminal defense attorneys while he's facing basically the most escalating simultaneous criminal probes of his long, litigious life. The new headline this week is familiar. Everyone at law firms saying no to Trump's bids to get seasoned lawyers. It's familiar because you may recall it's a problem Trump also faced, and this was documented during the Mueller probe. Now, the reporting states the reasons stem from one, Trump is a person, and two, Trump is a deadbeat. His style and refusal to cooperate or take advice makes him nearly impossible to represent, say sources. One observer diplomatically noted it would be unclear if new lawyers would ever get paid. Yes, it would be unclear. Or there's a long line of litigation and complaints about him not paying bills. So Trump has been in similar spots before. And he has found lawyers, and he has evaded other cases. So let's be clear. You might hear this and say, okay, Ari, but we've heard about this before, and then he still got away. But I want to be clear with you, only following the facts as we can find them, Donald Trump is in a measurably worse and more desperate legal condition now. For example, before, he'd never been subject to a criminal search of his home. That's a first this month. He'd never pled the Fifth Amendment until last week. He has a federal criminal probe eyeing his failed coup, which is a set of government-related problems with people cooperating when he's out of government, so different than the Mueller probe. And then just today, as reported, the top finance officer of his company pleading guilty. The whole firm awaits that October trial. And one of Trump's recent lawyers, who's not available to represent him anymore, is because of his legal problems. Rudy Giuliani, busy with the criminal probe in Georgia, where he has been formally targeted for indictment, just testified 6 hours yesterday. And that's a trend with Trump's lawyers. They often find themselves in need of other lawyers. And that's the third reason that sometimes it can be hard for him to find lawyers, because the new lawyers look at this kind of case, understand not only could it be expensive when they don't get paid, but it could be disastrous if they lose their law license, like Roy Cohn, who was disbarred, or Michael Cohen, who was convicted, or the recently searched coup lawyer, John Eastman. Now, Trump's lawyer representing specifically the Florida matter, that search, is already linked to the elector fraud plot, which means she could have Giuliani-type problems. And she left television to work for Trump, but then likened the situation, well, back to the silver screen.
Why wouldn't you just release that yourselves?
Well, this is part of the discussion with the Department of Justice. Of course, we're trying to do everything in accordance with the law and
there's absolutely nothing preventing you guys from releasing it, though.
Other than decorum.
That's one relatively new lawyer in Florida where, as we reported, there are signs that the search was more about recovering evidence than preparing charges, meaning that is not Donald Trump's worst problem. Most people would be very concerned to have their home searched under a criminal warrant in any situation, but for him, Florida's lesser. So what's more? Well, as I'm telling you, it's a different story in Georgia where the DA has targeted over a dozen people for indictment for alleged crimes that were to benefit Trump. Meaning not just random crimes or people he knows, but crimes for his political benefit, for his attempted coup. And it's linked to his own illicit demands, which were caught on tapes.
So, look, all I want to do is this. I just want to find 11,780 votes, which is one more than we have.
That is very bad. That is now criminal evidence. That is on tape. If you follow this stuff sometimes and you say, gosh, it seems like Trump did so much all over the place, especially around trying to overthrow the election, that's public evidence. That's something people can decide whether it disqualifies him for office or not in your own mind and vote. But our legal system, as I've told you, is much more precise. So if he does one thing over here in Wisconsin and another in Georgia, those are two different state probes when dealing with state law. Georgia is the place that's the worst for Trump. Georgia is the place where you have that tape. Georgia is the place where you have others already marked for targeted indictment. Now, having said that, nobody can predict what DAs or grand juries will do. But the evidence matters, so you have more damning evidence in Georgia than any other state. So his problem is most acute there. And let me tell you something. Donald Trump seems to know that. Because while I just showed you the reporting about how he's juggling this search for lawyers in more than one case all over the country and in his home state of Florida and recruiting people off TV or off personal relationships, in Georgia it's a little different, which is our special report. New information, he has now turned to a seasoned criminal defense trial lawyer who has actually clashed with this same DA in Atlanta, who has won some uphill criminal cases, who is part of a small but experienced criminal defense firm. It's the Findling Law Firm in Georgia, and it's headed by the former president of the National Association of Criminal Defense Lawyers. We're talking about real credentials here. The New York Times just broke the news that Trump got this legal breakthrough, and he's hired Drew Findling, sometimes called the billion-dollar lawyer, as his counsel in Georgia. Now, Mr. Findling also, according to the New York Times, is best known for representing rappers. And bottom line, Trump is facing a potential RICO charge here, which is a gangster problem. And now he tapped Gucci Mane's lawyer. It was Findling who got the very celebrated artist Gucci Mane off what could have been almost life and career-ending situations. He had 2013 charges that included allegedly threatening police, which has become quite popular among MAGA supporters lately. And Findling was able to bring that down from a possible 20 years in prison to 3. Now, I'll tell you, in that situation, it was considered a legal success, although it is 3 more years in prison than his new client would be hoping to serve.
There are 3 problems with the criminal justice system: racism, mass incarceration, and the issue of collateral consequences. Did that judge stop the hearing to basically say, hey, check out the black woman, she's articulate?
I think is that we've exaggerated what gangs are in Atlanta. I think we've exaggerated what RICO is in Atlanta. We're not really indicting anybody for Quentin Tarantino films, are we?
Right. I agree.
Mr. Feng there, speaking about a case we've covered that is involving the same DA and the use of evidence against artists. What we have here is a real-life story of rap and law combining. It's also an important legal development for this Georgia case. Now, yes, I'll be honest with you. It might be tempting to take this opening to try to wedge in some Gucci Mane reference into Trump's situation. But that doesn't seem necessary right now. And honestly, that's not what we're about here. It's not like just because the former president and Gucci Mane are in a story, we're going to just squeeze in every last Gucci bar into a newscast. I mean, does that sound like something we would do? Trump often talks like he's tough, like he's ready for these legal fights, like, to use the common parlance, he wants the smoke. Sometimes he makes it sound like he wants all the smoke. But in many of these big cases, Trump University, testifying to Mueller, firing his own staff, Donald Trump don't want the smoke. To paraphrase Gucci Mane, why you flexing, Donald? You don't want no smoke. You don't want no smoke. That was then. Now there is plenty of smoke for Donald Trump in Georgia. And to be clear, Findling is a serious attorney. He is known sometimes by certain cases, including representing some of Georgia's most prominent artists, but we've actually had him on the beat before as a prominent criminal defense attorney for his legal expertise assessing then-Trump lawyer Alan Dershowitz.
And I look at it as a trial attorney, and I look at Alan Dershowitz speaking and think about how he would be cross-examined. And he ended by talking about how partisan the proceedings have been to date. That shows that he's walking into this with a political opinion.
That's what he told us right here on the beat. Now, today, Findling is not analyzing Trump lawyers. He is one. And as a longtime civil rights advocate, he's also been publicly critical of Donald Trump. He called him a, quote, racist, and labeled him pathetic once again. So there is a lot here apart from the rap overlap. And we are learning that whatever else you think here is going on, Donald Trump or someone close to him who can affect his decision-making knows the difference between the search in Florida and the potential indictment in Georgia, knows the difference between some of what's going on in New York, which is serious but may not reach him personally, and what apparently requires one of the type of, and they say this as a compliment in the bar,
one of the type of legal killers you need to deal with real cases and real prison time against that DA and that use of RICO in Atlanta. So that's pretty striking. Now, ultimately, only Trump knows if this particular lawyer will get the bag, and if a counsel who once called Donald Trump racist is a fake friend or a true dog, or is someone who might only be after a publicity stunt. Either way, we know Trump is back at it again because he's faced legal pressure before. The big question here is, will he end up legally both eyes closed? Now, are these serious questions, or are these all Gucci Mane songs? Only time will tell.
Only time will tell. Gucci Mane songs, they might be. Only time will tell. Well, I have one last portion that I need to play for you. Ari Melba had the most fabulous report on the rule of law yesterday on his show. And it needs to be played for everybody to hear. You need to hear this. Now, I'll play right now before we run out of time. After it's over, I'm going to get back to you, but you need to hear this.
Turning to our special report right now on the rule of law and following the law, which Donald Trump refuses to do. The FBI searched Trump's Florida home because they said Trump was illegally holding top secret property and violated lawful orders to return it. And a judge agreed. And then, as everyone now knows, that search unearthed some of that very property, which they said he was illegally holding and illegally refusing to provide back under subpoena. So that's bad for Trump. His actions, though, are separate legally from whether he intentionally committed a new felony there. It may turn out that, as far as the Justice Department's concerned, they subpoenaed the material, they view Trump's lawyers as violating the order around that, and that they went back into his house primarily to just get the material. And we know the Attorney General said they had already tried less intrusive means and then only went in because Trump was not compliant.
The department does not take such a decision lightly. Where possible, it is standard practice to seek less intrusive means.
That's true. And Garland was basically telling Trump in public that Trump brought the search on himself by all that time refusing to comply. He had well over a year to return the material in general. He had many weeks after it was subpoenaed. He didn't comply at all. That is striking because, remember, it is conservatives and many Trump allies who have been so quick to lecture you and Americans everywhere whenever this has come up in the past, how if law enforcement asks you to do just about anything, then you have to go ahead and just comply.
Just comply, please. Listen.
I don't know why the gentleman did yield when he was asked to yield.
Those are Trump allies telling, in those cases, victims of police brutality, they should comply and yield. Why didn't you yield? And that's not any kind of just couple isolated examples. It is a standard piece of conservative refrains in these clashes over law enforcement and policing, including when people are documented as innocent or did nothing wrong or are facing very aggressive or even illegal police treatment. The line we hear over and over is just follow the officer's commands and comply no matter what.
If, in fact, a police officer gives you a command, please exit the car, you should say, yes, officer, no, officer, okay, officer.
I wish he would have complied a whole lot earlier.
Bad decisions by a cop, but those decisions wouldn't have been made if the perp didn't run away.
Just comply, please, listen.
Yeah, just comply. This frequent conservative claim goes well beyond complying with lawful police requests. I mean, listen to what we just heard. The demand is, comply first, fully, no matter what. Yes, officer. Make any objections that may come up, presumably later. And this logic, this argument, this talking point has come from conservatives over and over. So I'm showing you some stuff that's on air, but this is in communities around America. Minnesota has a police union representative, Brian Peters, who in that Dante Wright case, who was killed by an officer mistakenly drawing a gun, said, well, still, they should have just complied. And he argued that it was the noncompliance that set off the chain of events that led to the death. Houston police has a union, and they had a similar take where they said, quote, comply, don't die, live to have your day in court. Those are real examples. And that includes times where police were later found to make mistakes, sort of, according to court, used excessive force, sometimes even on tape. But that loud, stubborn, and often smug lecture comes from national political elites on the right and MAGA leaders and Trump allies, all the way down to those police unions I mentioned, comply. That's even when innocent people were injured or beaten or killed. That's the context here for the recent legal problems for Trump, because, again, this sometimes gets almost pushed out. There's so much going on, and that's why it's our special report right now, because I want everyone to understand Donald Trump was given months to comply, but he didn't. And Trump aides, who've been given special, careful, elite treatment when asked to follow the law and testify, have benefited from that whole different approach. There are Trump officials, though, who partially resisted, and there are others, especially for the January 6th committee, who fully resisted. No compliance. And I want to be clear. We're talking about Donald Trump and other powerful, well-connected white people who have acted like they are above the law, and their own past demands, some of which I just showed you, are really not about the rules. They're just telling others to comply. And many of those other cases involve regular citizens who don't have political connections and who are disproportionately black and brown people in America. So this is a documented double standard. Lawless resistance for these Trump elites, regimented compliance or violence for regular citizens, and especially regular citizens who are black and brown. And before I go any further, let's bring it together. We try to be clear here, and we try to be as factual and clear as possible. This is the same premise which animated all those Trump fans on January 6th. They genuinely expected to go in and break the law. They genuinely seemed to operate with immunity, to feel immune because of their privilege and worldview, and they brutally attacked police because they never cared about police or blue lives to begin with. Now, there are some people that day and the days after in America who were actually surprised by the Trump fans that day. Or some said, gosh, this is hypocritical given the past talk of blue lives. You know who wasn't shocked? All the MAGA people doing those crimes. Because that's what they came to do. And you know who else wasn't shocked? Their leader, who at the time was trying to lead a failed coup that was thwarted. Donald Trump was not shocked. He was elated, excited, juiced up. And he saluted them and called them special in real time. Because all those people together, who many of them hadn't met before, they already knew about this. If you were surprised or someone you know was surprised, then someone you know was taking the blue lives talk at face value. But it was crap. And they all knew it was crap. Because it was about power and dominance and race. And those people view the law as a way to enforce a right-wing white supremacy. And if they can't get the police to do that, which apparently they couldn't on the steps of the Capitol, but they have little use for it. And that's the deeper, more disturbing context for what we're living through right now, which I guess is surprising to some people. So let it not be surprising anymore. You have to see facts before you can fix facts. That's the disturbing context for this seemingly habitual political hypocrisy around the lawful search of Donald Trump's home.
The FBI raid of President Trump is a complete abuse and overreach of its authority.
The way our federal government has gone, it's like what we thought about the Gestapo.
This is absurd. Think about it. This has been a witch hunt for 6 years.
What they've been doing to President Trump is political persecution.
It is Joe Biden's DOJ, and they have weaponized this FBI at every turn.
If you're a Republican conservative and you hear the FBI is going after Trump again, it sounds alarm bells.
Alarm bells. Well, alarms are for emergencies. If there are alarms here, I can tell you the response to people connected to Trump who have not been complying has been at a very slow, careful, sensitive pace.
Take two of Trump's former White House aides who refused to comply with lawful subpoenas, Bannon and Navarro. Well, they've had plenty of time. Bannon had weeks between refusing to comply and being held in contempt, another month until he was indicted in November. And even in a dispute over noncompliance, I want you to understand, legally, the Justice Department still arranged to give Mr. Bannon the opportunity to come in voluntarily, which he did. Now, Peter Navarro spoke openly about his efforts to overthrow the election, which brought legal scrutiny on him. He put out a book. He did interviews. Only after all that did Congress subpoena him in February. Then, when he did not comply, he was held in contempt in April and indicted months later in June. Now, after all that, unlike Bannon, the DOJ did not try, perhaps because they are not naive, they did not try to get him to come in voluntarily. Similar to the legal process for Trump, where you have to go to a judge, the DOJ determined Navarro was not legally trustworthy. That's not an opinion. There's actually a standard for that. So they asked the judge to approve what was the less intrusive approach. And that left Mr. Navarro outraged, rattled, and seemingly experiencing something that he did not think could happen to him.
Former advisor Peter Navarro is at this hour in federal custody. He was issued a subpoena in February to produce documents and appear before the committee in March, but refused to do either.
What did they do? They intercepted me getting on the plane. And then they put me in handcuffs. They bring me here. They put me in leg irons. They stick me in a cell. That's punitive. That what they did to me today violated the Constitution.
They did put him in handcuffs. Handcuffs are part of getting arrested, just like going into the cell before an arraignment. Now, Mr. Navarro then went on Fox News with those same complaints I just showed you, which is the same place where viewers had been lectured so many times on how to avoid exactly those problems with police. Just say, yes, sir, yes, officer, and comply.
If, in fact, a police officer gives you a command, please exit the car, you should say, yes, officer, no, officer, okay, officer.
That's not how Navarro sounded when dealing with law enforcement or the officers of the subpoena, nor Bannon, nor Trump, who's going well beyond the Hannity standard of yes, officer, and currently threatening retaliation. But you could say, right, what's the context? What's the history? Those clips are from those reactions to police incidents with black Americans. So let's get into it. Some of what I showed you was the reaction to when an unarmed man, Walter Scott, was running away from an officer who shot him in the back and killed him. That was found to be illegal force because it was secretly caught on tape. Otherwise, we'd never know about it. Many critics still assailed Mr. Scott, seen there not posing a threat, for not complying. He's dead. Many times police use force even when people are seen complying. Terrence Crutcher had his hands clearly above his head, surrounded by officers and a cop car, when an officer still shot and killed him. That officer was acquitted. Now we're hearing talk about how agents searched Donald Trump's home under a warrant or how they executed that arrest warrant for Mr. Navarro. Now remember, it was a no-knock warrant, which is not the least intrusive means, that was used in an operation that led to the police shooting a hospital EMT, Breonna Taylor, shooting her to death while she was asleep. That operation did not afford her a chance to comply. Or take a recent case involving Mr. Jacob Blake. Now, he had not complied with an arrest warrant, so that's what we could call Peter Navarro territory. But when police approached, he was not ever seen threatening or attacking. He was documented walking away, and that's when police shot him in the back 7 times, paralyzing him, a rush to use force in this disturbing scene. We are not showing the entire video under our standards and practices. Now, every example is not the same, but some of the commentators are. We just showed you Trump ally and lawyer Lindsey Graham, who actually recently blew through and did not comply with an ordered court appearance in Georgia. We'll see if he eventually shows up. Now, in this report, we showed him insinuating that a, quote, gentleman should have complied, should have yielded when asked. I just showed you Mr. Blake. That was Senator Graham talking specifically about Jacob Blake.
I don't know why the gentleman did yield when he was asked to yield.
He didn't yield when he was asked to yield, Mr. Graham says in response to the shooting. That's the wrong answer legally. Graham, a lawyer, knows it is illegal for police to use lethal force on a person simply because the person's fleeing. Resisting arrest is illegal, so is speeding, so is tax evasion. I could read you a lot of laws. Those things in America under the law and Supreme Court precedent are not punishable by a shooting or a summary execution. So the hypocrisy and the double standard here matters. It is political and it is racial. And the point is not that police should be using even more force against whomever suspects. The point is today's right-wing politics and a very long strain of white supremacy in America views police as the muscle for that supremacist power structure. And it does not view police as stewards of independent fairness or accountability for all. It is a thuggish, authoritarian, and supremacist mentality, and it predates Trump, though he tapped into it and has helped animate it and make it worse. But that also means, according to what we know, it would likely endure well past the Trump era or any single politician. Now, they don't always teach this in school, so consider class in session here on the news tonight. Ibram Kendi has documented this wider history where many Americans may genuinely but mistakenly believe police violence is caused by just a lack of compliance rather than the violent remnants of slavery. And this is about facts and data, which show that American police escalate interactions on a racial basis. Police use more aggressive and less respectful approaches to Black Americans in traffic stops, which are a very common first order interaction between random people and police. And also, police use more respectful and de-escalating approaches with the majority of white Americans in the same stops. Data shows police sometimes even apologize for having to do the stop or the interaction at all, and that data overlaps with class discrimination. Yvonne Abraham writes in the Boston Globe that when you tie it together, for many conservatives, blue lives mattered only when they were policing Black ones. So a lot of this is interrelated. And if it sounds hard to hear for some people who feel like they want to support police, or at least the honest police, or think better of America, I get it. I hear you. There's facts and emotion. The emotion you have for the officer down the block, or someone you had a good interaction with, or how you want America to be, that's understandable emotion. I get it. But I'm here reporting the facts for you. And the history of white supremacist violence and the way it relates to our current moment is a fact. So it's one that needs to be dealt with. There's more than one implication. For the lives of many real people, the less intrusive measures that were used in these examples to search Donald Trump or to peacefully arrest Steve Bannon, they can actually be deployed more often, more uniformly, and more fairly. And that's quite true, literally, as a matter of law and policing. If the innocent Breonna Taylor had been policed under the standard used for the guilty Steve Bannon, she would be alive today. And when I say guilty, I'm referring to his conviction, not an opinion. Just use the convicted Bannon standard, and she'd be alive. If the unarmed, no-threat Walter Scott had been later apprehended by the standard used for the indicted, not complying Mr. Navarro, then Mr. Scott would be peacefully apprehended in handcuffs for a day in court, not shot in the back. The list goes on. And I can tell you, as a legal reporter and lawyer, it is a very long list. I'm not going to go through all of it tonight. This is about the type of policing which impacts the largest number of Americans. If you just made those changes, if you just afforded what I
refer legally to as the convicted Bannon standard for those other people, many of them innocent. Then another key implication goes to the empty core of this right-wing project. And that's the effort to control and corrupt any prospect of equal justice under the law in America. It is an effort to use or get law enforcement to be used as a tool of white supremacy and right-wing political persecution. Lock her up. Now that campaign is bad for most Americans. It undermines public safety. It is undemocratic, and it is also very bad for honest police, because honest police officers don't want to be pulled into that political racial project. So when you hear a right-wing politicized framework about compliance, which you may when subjects turn and there's a debate about a different incident that doesn't involve them as their heroes, know that that framework is mostly crap and a trick. And that some of the people peddling it also know that, while others may just be repeating what they hear. The law requires compliance, but it does not mandate injury, let alone murder, to achieve compliance. And so it may seem sometimes like everything runs together, and we live in a mediated environment where you can link almost anything. But these are not links we're drawing in observation. These are the roots of the justice system. And for people who care about justice, and want the system to better pursue it, these are pieces of history, of violence, of state murder that we have been working on for a very long time. And if you think it feels hopeless, you have to remember, the reason that so many people lie about the justice system is that even they in their cynicism know the truth can still matter. They seem to think if enough people knew the truth, maybe their efforts wouldn't work as well, so they keep lying to you. Don't let them get away with it. Keep your eye on the ball and on these facts, because justice is still possible. We'll be right back.
Thank you, Ari.
And I want to say also thank you, Ari. I had to play the whole thing. There were some people that couldn't hold on anymore, and I understand that. But that was the greatest retort on the rule of law I have ever heard by anybody. And I'll play that one more time for some of you who didn't hear it. But believe me, everything that Ari said is true. Every single thing. And I want to thank you all for listening. And glad you could hang on and listen to the rest of it, to especially the rule of law. I wanted to go off with that frame of reference. Forget all the other stuff. That was the most important thing. If I didn't play nothing else, that was the most important. It was that 20 minutes and 30 seconds that I've ever done on this show. I want to thank everybody for being here. I want to thank everybody for listening. And everybody, have a great weekend. Have a great week. All right, everybody. Thank you. Bye-bye.